Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
Well, Graham Nuttall was a hugely influential Irish visual artist. Many listeners will instantly picture his sharply angled portraits with the eyes glancing to the side. He painted Taoiseach, he painted chefs, sailors, beautiful women and gangsters. He also worked in tapestry and wood and sculpture, and he created a famous chess set with furniture designer David Linley. And his work was collected by the likes of Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone. Well, Graham died in May 2023, and now a major retrospective exhibition of his work is coming up in the RDS, and it has the backing of Ruth Nuttall, his widow. And Ruth joins me now in studio. Good morning to you, Ruth.
Good morning, Mary.
Lovely to have you here. Listen, before we talk about the work, I want to hear about how you met Graham. I think he walked into your restaurant and he gave out to you.
He did. First of all, we were across the street from him in a basement, and it had previously been George's, which was fairly iconic at that time and very late night and all that. So he had popped his head in a couple of times and wanted to know what the delay was. Why were we taking so long to open? And then he came down one afternoon and we were just almost ready to go. And he said, "So where's the art? There's no art." And I didn't want to say, "Yeah, there's no money. There's no budget." So mm-hmm. I did it as delicately as I could. And he was shaking his head and he said, right, come on, this way. And we went across the street. And before I sort of really realised what was happening, I was carrying Taoiseach prints back to the restaurant with him. But my heart was pounding. I thought, how am I going to? So I said, "Look, I'm really sorry, but there really isn't a budget for art." And he looked at me and in a very cross voice said, "Madam, did anybody ask you for money?" So he was a little intimidating, I found. Now, he became fantastic patron of the restaurant, brought loads of people, really was so encouraging. And we just became friends. It was impossible not to. He had a very warm side to him. A very easy side to him, and everybody was welcome.
And did you know who he was? Did you realise he was this hugely successful
not really.
Artist?
No, not really. I knew he was an artist, and he lived in a big house across the road. So, yeah, must have been fairly successful. But I wasn't tuned into art. I was really buried with the getting the restaurant up and going. And there was, you know, I didn't realise, I suppose. But I eventually got it.
Yeah. And when, as you say, a friendship developed. And when did you know a friendship was going to become more than that and you would become a couple?
Really, at the end of the restaurant's life, it just didn't do very well. And he had said to me to meet him. Eden was there at the time, to meet him for something to eat in Eden. And I think that night, that was... Yes. I had a very strong insight. The next day I thought, "Oh, that's the end of my single life, I think." I think that's done now.
Now, what was he like in those early years, Ruth, when you were together? I suppose before he got ill, he was really well known, as you said. He was in your restaurant with lots of different people. Was he easy to live with, or did that artistic temperament that many artists have ever try your patience?
Yes. But he wasn't as difficult to live with as people presume. There was a very strong routine. He got up very early. We ate early in the evening. He would be in bed with a book by 9 o'clock. That was six nights of the week. That's how that worked. He just went down to the studio, 8 o'clock, came up 6 o'clock. And when we lived that way, it was easy and was very little negatives. But the negatives would come, you know, if you suggested doing something sort of that was off that.
Interesting.
You know, he was a very much more sociable person than I am, but only for one night a week. Wow. It was a,
He liked his routine and he worked so hard. Mm. You did love to travel together though,
didn't you? Oh yeah, we had great fun. Like great fun. He was a brilliant person to travel with. Really easygoing. A bit too easygoing when it came to playing times. That was a bit nerve-wracking sometimes. But he was. And he really sort of, he had a real interest in buildings and in other people's culture. And he was really informed, which was, it's like having your own personal
tour guide.
Tour guide with you, yeah. Especially if you're in galleries, you know, if you were in any of the art galleries. He loved Barcelona. He loved Picasso. We just had a great time in all of those places. Yeah, brilliant.
Talk to me, if you will, Ruth, about his illness. I think, is this right? He had liver and kidney problems.
Yeah, organ failure. He first went to dialysis in 2018, and that was really tough on him. His blood pressure would drop, the machine would trigger, the nurse would have to come over. This was just, it was just really tough on him. That was 3 days a week for 3 hours. But, you know, you build in the time you get there and the time you get home. When he would come home, he was fit for nothing. He was just totally exhausted. But the next day, he would get up, have his porridge, go down to the studio and work for, not the full day the way it had been, you know, but certainly until about 2 o'clock. And then he'd come up. And that always amazed me, you know, really and truly it did.
Do you know what caused his illness?
I don't know the exact cause of it. I mean, he'd always had kidney problems. Mm. As a kid, he'd had kidney problems. He probably didn't do himself huge favours but in his young life. But really, he was living a very clean life before he got sick, is all I can say. He was, I mean, he hated the renal diet. That was a cause of consternation, to say the least. He was very, very, he was very into his food, you know. So this, it's a quite a bland diet, very restricted. So
he didn't like that.
He didn't like that. I play by the rules. Graham didn't. That was where the divide was, and I just kept. And he wouldn't get up and do it himself. He couldn't really anyway. So he was stuck with it. But he got very sick then. The September of the following year. And needed a liver transplant, beg your pardon, and was in St. Vincent's until COVID. So at that point, they were trying to clear out the hospitals, feeling that they would, that was the place where they'd get his, and he was sent to a rehab in Kiltipper. And as we know now, that wasn't the case. It was actually the nursing homes that took the first big hit. Yeah. But after 3 days there, they told me that I wouldn't be able to visit him anymore. So then day four came and I got the phone call to say, well, I've told them I'm leaving and you'll need to get down here now and pick me up. So I did. Got him home on the Sunday. And and thank God, really and truly, you know.
Was that daunting, though, during COVID?
That most certainly was, yeah. Yeah.
And so also, he signed himself out, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Said, come and get me.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually out. I'm outside. So, yeah. And also, I hadn't actually, I knew what medicines he was on and all of that, but I hadn't given them to him. So I now had this sort of huge pack of different coloured tablets. I thought, I'll probably kill him before COVID does. But I got through that. And after a couple of months, he was very, very weak. His mobility was awful. But after, it was Easter Sunday after COVID, and I don't know if you remember, it was quite late that year, and I think the weather was quite good and people were sort of starting to come out a little bit and meet each other in parks and whatever. And I had broken the rule of the diet, which I did on Easter and at Christmas. And we were having lamb and we were having the whole shebang and I thought this might cheer him up. And he was sitting in a chair behind me and he said, right, I've had enough of this. And I thought it was because I wasn't listening to what he was saying, which would happen sometimes. So he was getting to his feet. He was struggling, but he was on his feet. And he said, now, get me downstairs to the studio. And I was trying to explain to your researcher, the studio is downstairs outside. The stairs aren't great. They're solid, but you know, you'd be holding it. Yeah. So I thought, I can't do that. That's not going to happen. And I said, but sure you can't. And he said, oh no, I'm doing it. And he had the stick in one hand and he was getting out the door. So we went down on our backsides.
Wow.
And
because he wanted to work.
Oh
in
no,
the
he was going down those stairs. It was simple as that. And he went into the studio. I came back upstairs. My mother was living downstairs at the time. She had cancer. So I was kind of between them. And I sort of lost track of time. And then I realised he'd been down there an hour and a half. And I thought, oh God. And I flew down the stairs, thinking I'd probably find him on his back or something. And he was sitting at the easel as if he had, the way he always had done without any bother, and he had a small picture drawn out. He hadn't started painting, but he had drawn it out.
Wow.
And I was mesmerised.
He could do that.
Yeah, he couldn't walk. He couldn't dress himself without help. It was extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know?
But it was also, was it very beautiful for you in a way that he could do this?
It was just extraordinary. And, you know, when you see somebody who has that sort of will, you think there is a bit of hope here. You know, you don't lose your faith in it. It's, yeah. He was a bit of a force to be reckoned with.
Extraordinary.
That's for sure.
Now, you had a lot on. As you say, you were looking after your mom as well. Then you donated a kidney to Graham, didn't you?
Yeah. Because of COVID, that whole transplant area was completely upended because the only transplants that were taking place were those that were absolutely necessary.
Mm.
So there was a big backlog.
Yeah.
So the process then of testing and making sure everything slowed down and we were at the end of a queue or the middle of the end of a queue or whatever. So it didn't seem even real when it started. But when they rang me and said, you're actually a match, because I had done bloods and whatever, I went down to him and I said, we're a match. We're a match. And he said, I know that. I said, a kidney match. We're a match. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, they'll probably find something wrong with you. I thought, okay. So I went back upstairs. I thought, okay. But actually they do a lot. It's very involved to check you out, the donor. So they check everything, you know, so you have everything done. And when they physically decided, yes, everything's good to go, they go upstairs to the head and make sure that the head is good to go.
Yeah.
So you've another sort of 6 or 8 weeks where this was Zoom for me, where you are sort of psychologically tested, checked to make sure that for all the right reasons that you're doing this. But when I was checked physically and then I told him, so look, I'm now... There's a psychiatrist who, and he said, oh, well, that's it. Forget it. There's no way you're passing that. So I said, right, really? From you? That is really choice. But I did. And we went ahead and it worked until it didn't. And actually, the kidney worked all the time. It was just that the everything that happened afterwards, he was back in ICU 3 times. He had to have a keyhole surgery on his brain. It was just, it just seemed endless. And then somewhere around the Christmas before he died, he seemed to have turned a bit of a corner. He was doing physio in the matter. We were doing physio at home. His attitude was very clear. Noel had sown great seed with the retrospective.
That's Noel Kelly.
Noel Kelly. Yeah. And he had decided he was walking into his exhibition and in a brand new suit, which he was also Googling a lot. And
but then you went to Spain, didn't you, I think, where I think we, his daughter had a place.
His daughter and his granddaughter, Ella. And, yeah, so he had been passed by, everybody had checked him and said yes, or I wouldn't have
taken
a chance. And I, that night he had said, I'm a bit tired. And I had said, well, let the girls go out and we'll stay in. There's no problem, you know. And Kate had asked him, that's his daughter, did he want a doctor? And he was, no, thank you. That was not happening. And up he got and he said, no, I'm actually okay. You know, I feel okay. So we went out to dinner. It became pretty obvious after about half an hour he wasn't up to it. He was. Mm. So we came home. He went to bed. I checked him at around, well, I had to give him a tablet at 9, an anti-rejection tablet, and that was just a routine. And I gave him some water. Checked him again at 11 when I was going to bed. Came in at 3. He asked me for some cold water and came back and checked him at 6 and he was gone. He was dead. So it was pretty shocking stuff. And yeah, and shocking for obviously for Kate, but also for her daughter. She was only 14 at the time, you know. So yeah, it was awful.
And how are you doing now?
I am doing okay, thank you. Mm. It's strange talking about him so much again, you know, after such a long, because anybody who knows me obviously knows the story, so you don't tell the story, you know.
And the lovely thing is, though, and maybe is this of help to you in grieving, that this retrospective exhibition, it's happening, it's going to be free to the public. And is it important to you that he is remembered and honoured for his work?
Absolutely. Not just remembered for the time that he was sick. Yeah. That wasn't his identity. You know, obviously he was part of his life, but not the only part. You know, he's done so much. He worked so hard. Mm-hmm. Like, this would be beautiful to show, especially, I think, lovely that it's free, because maybe some families with younger people who wouldn't have known anything about the Celtic Tiger or the artist that's associated with him, just a fresh new group of people to see the work.
And his amazing work. Well, look, Ruth Nuttall, thanks so much for coming in today. That retrospective exhibition, Graham Nuttall, 1954 to 2023, it's in the Minerva Suite in the RDS here in Dublin from the 19th to the 21st of September. And as we said, admission is free. Thank you so much for coming
in.
I'm so sorry you lost your husband.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ruth. We'll take a break.